Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the best animated shows ever, so far, with MC and Troy.
I'm Troy.
And I'm MC.
And this is the best animated shows ever. So far. Good dancing. I like the booging. That's good. MC was just grooving while we did the pause. This is the show where we watch, discuss, and rank every animated show eventually. And today we are talking about Castlevania Season 1, Episode 2, Necropolis. But before we get to that, let's talk about how this show got made. So this is, as we said last time, it's a Netflix original series, but it actually didn't start that way. It started back in like 2006, 2007 as a plan to make a film-length adaptation of Castlevania 3. So the company that ended up making the cartoon got the rights to make a film, and they hired on Warren Ellis to be the screenwriter for the film. And so he started working on it then. And they knew from the very beginning this was going to be a not a kid's movie. You know, in the vein of Akira, this was a cartoon that was not aimed at kids by any means. So it had the gore and the gruesomeness and the goat f***ery in it from the very, very beginning of things. However, Warren started working on it, Warren Ellis, and was like, listen, I don't know Castlevania at all. But I do know old horror movies. So I'm just going to make this like an old horror movie. And started writing it out. He was basing it on the Hammer Film Productions horror movies from the 50s and 60s and 70s. Which includes a Dracula film I've never seen. Where Christopher Lee plays Dracula and Peter Cushing is Van Helsing. And I really want to see that movie.
I have seen that.
That sounds so good.
It is good. But like a cheesy, corny way as well.
And that's what he kind of was going for when he made this show, was the cheesy, corny horror movies. So he started working on the screenplay for this 80-minute film. He was going to do all of Castlevania 3 in 80 minutes. And he sat down at a stone tablet, because this was in the way back times of 2006, before we had computers. So he sat there with his chisel and went, all right, line one, what's line one going to be? 80 minutes? Wait, no, I can't do 80 minutes. So he turned around and was like, hey, listen, I know you guys asked me to write an 80-minute film adapting Castlevania 3. Instead, what I've done... My phone's going off.
What?
I know you asked me to write an 80-minute film adapting Castlevania 3 to feature length. Instead, what I've done is I've broken down the story of Castlevania into 3 80-minute long segments, each of which is broken up into 3 acts. Cool? And they were like, I guess. And then they were like, actually, wait, no, I guess not. Because when he finished writing the script, the project died. So it was about 2007, 2008. He had finished writing the whole script for the first movie. He was going to write 2 and 3 later on. And it just completely died. And then the show ended up coming out 9 years after that. So this script was done almost a decade before the show was actually produced.
Wow.
As a movie. And they adapted it into this TV format. So season one of the show is the first of the 3 parts that he was working on. And then season 2 is parts 2 and 3 of what he originally planned out for this this series covering Castlevania 3. That does make me a little nervous about the fact, though, that Netflix has ordered a season 3 of this show, because I don't know, I haven't finished watching the show. Don't tell me, no spoilers. But no. The fact that he planned it as a 3-part series and seasons 1 and 2 cover all 3 parts of that 3-part series makes me wonder if season 3 might be either not as good, or if maybe it's going to be like totally unrelated. Like I said last episode, the original Castlevania is actually set like a couple hundred years after Castlevania 3. So it almost makes me wonder if that's what they're going to do, is do a time jump and we'll hang out with Simon Belmont.
Well, I mean, it kind of jumps through like all the games sort of jump backwards and forwards. Like they're not in chronological order the way
true.
That they
this
came
is very
out.
True. Yeah.
So it there's a whole bunch they can play with in that sort of like realm.
Yeah.
Like there's a bunch.
I would be interested to see one where they jumped like way forward in time. That I think that would be kind of cool because I really like this the aesthetic of this show where it's like steampunk demonic. I think that's a really cool of styles. And I would be interested to see, like, all right, so if in 1475 or whatever, Dracula was, you know, using electricity and thermodynamics and gears way before anybody else, what is he doing if you jump forward to, like, 1975? What does Dracula's castle look like? I would be very interested in that.
Cool. Yeah. No, that's a very good way to explain sort of, like, what the season is like completely, like the steampunk demon.
Mm-hmm.
That's perfect, like, description for the whole thing.
Yeah.
So do you want to get into the second episode, Necropolis?
Let's talk Necropolis.
So we're back in the bar with Trevor Belmont.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys are still going on about how black magic and the Belmonts are the reason these demons are running rampage across the countryside. Trevor gets up. He approaches the bar to get another ale. And he's like, and the bartender's like, oh, you gotta pay first.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes searching for his purse. He pulls out this little coin bag. And he tosses it to the barman. But as he's doing all that, the guy who caught someone fornicating with his goat decides that he wants to pick a fight with Trevor because he realizes there's a family crest on his tunic.
Yep.
And Trevor tries real hard not to get into this fight.
Yeah, he is constantly like backing away and being like, I don't want to do this. The problem is that the drunk inbred hick is
Oh, by the way, we're not just saying that.
They describe their inbreeding in almost as graphic detail as they describe their goat fornication.
His brother is also his cousin because they have the same father, but they have one of them has is from the other one's aunt. So
yeah. He goes, "We may have the same father, but you came out of my aunt." Like, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. So this guy is not only trying to pick a fight with Trevor, but he's specifically like running the Belmont name through the mud as a way to try to provoke him. And Trevor, like, I think that if this guy had been personal about it just towards Trevor, he would have just left the bar. But the fact that he kept insulting the Belmonts as a clan, I think that's what pushed Trevor over the edge.
Oh, yeah, because he's like, there's a point when this guy's berating him. He's like, we didn't bring the darkness in. In fact, we were, what he says is the Belmonts didn't conspire with the monsters. They fought them,
right,
is what I believe he says. And Trevor is like, and when he gets pissed off like that, he takes a second and he takes a breath and he's like, listen, I don't want to get in a fight with you. And
but that's all in one line. He's like, we didn't conspire with the monsters. We fought the monsters.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't want to fight you. And yeah, I wish that he said, like, listen, I'm a freaking vampire hunter. I will destroy you. But no.
But no, he's drunk. Mm-hmm. They're all drunk.
Yeah.
And the guy who's who hit the goat fornicator in the face with a shovel...
Mm-hmm.
His brother cousin and the skinny runner who comes in and informs them about the demons, mm-hmm, all decide that they're going to start this fight with Trevor.
And he mostly beats them up. Like, he's clearly a much better fighter than any of them.
He gets hit in the nuts, like, 2 or 3 times.
He does get hit in the nuts a couple times.
And here's the thing. He's still fighting these guys. Like, I'm pretty sure, that doesn't happen often. Like, he's holding his own. There's 3 of them. He's had a couple of nut shots. And one of the guys is just, like, a really tall, muscular dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's like, he looks to be like 6'5".
Yeah, and looks like he knows how to fight. I mean, how to brawl, at least.
Yeah. At least get into a few bar fights and come out on the better end of it.
Yeah.
That's the brother cousin.
So Trevor's mostly beaten them all up, and he stands up, and at one point he does say, "I've fought fucking vampires." But then he goes, "I'm Trevor fucking Belmont, and I've never lost a fight to man nor fucking beast." And then one of them kicks his foot out from under him, and another hits him with a chair. And he goes, "Oh, shit."
But it doesn't really show the end of the fight. It shows him walking out under his own power, but we don't see what happened to the 3 guys.
He did not get thrown out of the bar. He ultimately walks out of the bar. So I think he ended up knocking all of them unconscious, but it just perhaps was not as smooth of a fight as he expected it to be.
Well, he was drunk.
He was very drunk. Like, he walks out of the bar and vomits, although that could have been from all the kicks to the nuts.
Oh, it could have been that as well. Yeah. But in the previous scene, his cheeks are, like, bright red, which is the equivalent of being like, "Hey, this person's real drunk in anime."
You know, I kind of thought for a minute that it was going to be something like a move that I think maybe I've seen Spike from Cowboy Bebop pull, or maybe it was somebody else, where they start the fight like pretending to be drunk in order to like put people off their guard. And then it turns out like, "Ah, no, I was actually stone cold sober and now I've destroyed you all." It wasn't the case, but for a second I thought that's what it was going to be. And then I was like, oh, no, he's actually very, very drunk right now. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So... For people who don't know about the pink cheek thing, that's because there's a slight inherited allergic reaction that happens within Asian people that causes their cheeks to go red when they drink alcohol.
Yeah, alcohol can hit a little harder if you've got that genetic marker, and it can make you flush a lot more than other people do.
Yeah. So in anime, it's a trope. If they're drunk, there's a flush to their face.
I should have been watching for that. One thing I did notice in this fight scene, and I noticed it throughout the show, a mark against it is I don't like the music in the fight scenes. I think that there's a couple exceptions to this, but on the whole, like, very cool visuals will be happening with the fights, and the music just doesn't like match up to it. It's not like epic enough in a lot of the fight scenes.
I would say for most of season 1, yes. Episode 4 is like the the standout different, because there's some real epic music during some of the fight scenes, especially the last fight scene in episode 4. There's just some really good music. But I reckon overall, like, the sound design, I guess, it's pretty good. The ambient sounds and like the background noises and like all like when they decide to not use noise is,
yeah, there's times like, where like in a montage you'll see people talking but you won't hear them because it's more about the atmosphere.
Yeah, and it's spot on, and like all that stuff's good. During fight scenes and stuff, like this, specifically this fight scene, the music's kind of letting it down, but it doesn't happen throughout the whole season. It's like every now and then. It's like,
yeah, it's inconsistent.
It's like a, yeah,
which
it's like
weird,
a weird choice.
Because the Castlevania games, that's one of the things I've heard people compliment them on, is having like nice, awesome, like epic action music. And the show, like, it's not like it has a bad soundtrack. Like, the music's not bad. It just, did you see Captain Marvel?
No, I haven't, not yet.
Oh man, you should see Captain Marvel. It's very good.
I also need to see Endgame.
I still haven't seen that. I'm seeing it in 2 days. I'm so excited. So in Captain Marvel, there is one particular scene where there's a cool fight scene set to I'm Just a Girl by No Doubt, which, like...
Okay, yeah.
Considering, like, the girl power mentality of that movie is fantastic, but it feels like they edited the movie, or the fight scene, to a different song. Because none of the, like... beats of the fight scene match with, like, when the song switches tempo or things like that. Like, I don't know enough about music to explain it well, but it's just, it, like that song starts, like, okay, we're clearly gonna have a fight scene here, and then it starts playing I'm Just a Girl, and you're like, oh yeah, this is gonna be rad, and then it just doesn't quite match up.
Hit.
And that's how I feel about a lot of the fight scenes in this, is that, like, the music that's playing is fine, and the action of the fight scene is fine, but they're not coming together somehow.
I think it's mostly this episode.
Yeah, I noticed it mostly in this one. I noticed it a little bit in episode 3 as well. At the end of episode 3, it, like, there's a switch where suddenly it's like, oh, there it is. Now the music is connecting with the fight. And it happens through the rest of episode 3 and then through episode 4 as well. So, I don't know. It's something that I don't have the music theory credentials to explain properly, but something about it just doesn't quite work for me.
If I was 17 or 18 when I was doing my music classes, I might be able to do a better job, but I've forgotten all that. I'm almost 32. I can't remember high school very much anymore.
Yeah, who remembers anything from when they were 17 or 18?
Actually. Yeah, I might be 32 when this comes out.
When's your birthday?
The 14th.
Let's see this. No, you will be turning 32 the day that Castlevania Episode 1 comes out. So happy birthday last week in the future.
Yeah. Well, technically it might be the 15th here by that time. Time travel.
Don't talk to me about time travel. Let's see.
I'm trying to
okay. I just need to call out a few lines. Hang on, before we move on, I just realized I have some lines from this fight scene called out that I need to write down.
Okay.
One is the hit guy goes, is like, you know, confess, tell me you're a Belmont. I know you're a Belmont. What's your name? And he goes, Jesus of Nazareth.
Yeah. I love that line.
And then eventually he admits Trevor Belmont, House Belmont, last son of the Belmont family, which is good. He has the line where he says, I used to fight fucking vampires. He gets kicked in the nuts twice and goes, would you please leave my testicles alone? And I have a note that says, weird chipper happy music. It feels like I should be shopping for potions in an item shop. And then the last quote I have from this fight scene is, I hope you all bleed out through your asses. Every rat bastard, last one of you.
After this, he walks out under his own power, but then falls down in the middle of the street and starts vomiting.
Yep.
And then he gets back up and he walks off into the forest and finds a tree to fall asleep under, which is what he wanted to do earlier after getting a beer and finding a place to take a piss. Yep. Before the fight happened.
He just wants a tree to sleep under. He talks about wanting to find trees a lot. Trevor Belmont has a thing for trees. I guess that's what happens when you're a vagrant. Is you're like, I want to find a tree to sleep under. And then later he's like, I want to find a tree to sit in while I watch the world burn. I love sitting in a tree. Like, okay. All right, Trevor.
What are you supposed to do when the church excommunicates you and burns down your family home? Like, what are you supposed to do? Find your lands.
Find a good tree. That's all you got left in this world is a good tree. This is what Trevor's voice sounds like, but apparently in my head he's Batman.
But he finds that tree to sleep under. He goes to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wakes up the next morning and he's like, I'm hungry. let's go to this next town that's the only town within for 40 miles mm-hmm. to get something to eat. And he, and this is the most disturbing scene in pretty much the whole series up until the last episode. There's a group of demons exiting this town, mm-hmm. and one of the demons has a baby in its mouth.
Just walking around holding a baby in its mouth. Ugh. Yeah.
And then you, it cuts back to Trevor, and he hears, I guess, he hears the scream from the town, but yeah. It shows, like, it like, covers this town, and there's, like, heads on spikes and entrails around the marketplace and, like, the town square and stuff. It's, like, really gruesome. This, like, this whole, like, him walking up to the town of Grest?
Greshit. Yeah, it sounds like we find out a little bit later on, but just to kind of, jump us forward. Basically, what's happened is the demons have destroyed Tregavista, the main city in this region, and now they're moving on basically by population density, it seems like. They move from town to town. So Greshit is not, I don't think, even the second most populous city, but they've wiped out everything above it. So now they're working on Greshit. And it's interesting because the demon hordes, like, they only come at night, and I gotta believe they could pretty much flatten a city in a day. But that's not what demon hordes are about. So they're doing this, like, night-by-night attack, just terrorizing the people of the city. And it's...
Oh, yeah.
It's messed up.
I have a feeling they don't actually eat any of the meat that they're taking. The whole point of, like, the stuff that they're doing is to instill fear and terror and, like, all like, these...
We're gonna
negative
kill
emotions.
You. We're gonna kill you eventually, but first we're gonna let you live in, like, absolute terror for a while.
I think the demon they're trying to get across without actually saying it that these demons are feeding off of the terror and like all these negative emotions that are happening in this town.
They do tell us in the next episode about a specific enemy that does that feeds on terror. So yeah, that's kind of the sense I got too, is that, like, the demon hordes are empowered by people's fear of them. So it's better
fear,
for the demon horde
anger.
To do that. Yeah.
Yeah. But this is the best bit in this episode, is when Trevor walks down and he's like, huh, they wouldn't just do this so they could deny me breakfast. And then he finds an entrance into the city, and the only entrance he can find is this busted out sewer hole. And right before he's about to step in the first time, it's like some sewage comes flying out of it. And he's like, oh man, I wish people would give you some warning before throwing their chamber pots out.
You know, one of the things I read about in reading about the making of this show is that they turned to things like Cowboy Bebop for ideas on how to incorporate humor with intense action and drama. And I think that this like, oh man, he has to climb up a sewer pipe is one of those things where it's like,
yeah,
here's a little lighthearted thing. But I don't think it works as well as it does in Bebop, because the darkness on this show is so much darker than it is on Bebop.
Oh yeah,
that, like, the throwaway humor just feels out of place more than anything. So, like, he gets into the town and he's walking through all this, like, carnage, and we get this montage
no,
and everything.
I want to talk about the next little bit, like, as he gets out of the sewer pipe and the guards there what he does. Because Trevor pulls out a knife and he flips it around, so he's got the butt end of the knife ready to, like,
knock this guard out.
Except as soon as he gets close enough, the guard's snoring.
Yeah.
This guard's on watch, and he's asleep on watch. No wonder why these demons are getting away with killing all these fucking people. The guards are on bloody watch, sleeping the whole bloody time. And Trevor just is like, puts his knife away and just
strolls past.
Saunters into the town.
Yeah. That was a good joke. See, the sewer pipe thing didn't do it for me, but that was like a nice little moment of levity where he's like all ready to knock the guy out, and then he's like, ah, oh, cool. All right.
but the
big set piece of this montage of how messed up the town is that they're just picking up bodies and chucking them off a bridge because there's so many bodies that, like, what else are you going to do with them? And as Trevor walks by, he looks down at the pile of dead bodies and he spits on it. And I was like,
yeah,
hey, Trevor, listen, I understand that, like, you used to fight monsters and then the people told you not to fight monsters and now they're being killed by monsters. And I understand how that could prevent you from being totally sympathetic to them, but you don't have to spit on the pile of corpses. That's perhaps one step too far.
I don't think he was spitting on the pile of corpses. I just think he was spitting. But it did seem a little bit disrespectful in that scene.
A little bit.
Because I'm not sure what experience you have with corpses.
I'm not talking human.
I'm just talking like dead animals and stuff.
Virtually none.
So, for those who don't know yet, I am Australian. I have lived in a fairly rural place when I was younger. My granddad did own a farm. So, there was once when I was down at my grandfather's, the next door neighbors, one of their cows died. And I often came across dead kangaroos when I would be out going, like, just wandering in the bush and stuff. And dead animals, especially humans, there's a smell.
Okay.
But not just a smell, because when that smell hits you, you get a taste in the back of your throat.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's bad. So him spitting is to me like, ah, oh, that's a bad smell.
Okay.
Sort of spit.
Okay. I guess it's defensible, but I'm pretty sure he spits over the edge
of the
bridge.
Here's the thing. Like, if you haven't been around, like, dead things before, you wouldn't know this. So it does seem very disrespectful.
Yeah.
Like, it's a thing. But the way that he spits, I'm not sure if it goes over the edge of the bridge, but it kind of looks like it does.
I just went and watched it again. It doesn't specifically show us one way or the other. He's just standing on the bridge, and then it makes a spitting sound. So,
yeah.
They don't clarify. Oh, gosh. I just watched further forward to where he gets to the marketplace, and they're cleaning up the blood and the entrails, and, oh, it's so nasty.
Oh, yeah. There's, like, the demons have put guts up around.
They've
like,
literally,
streamers.
Like, taken guts and put them up like streamers all around the marketplace. Like, it's festival day, except with guts.
Yeah. It's terrible.
It's really gross.
And
it's
then,
really gross.
And then he goes up to a store and he buys meat.
Yeah, how can you be hungry for meat at a time like that? Like, ugh.
Like, if he went and got, like, an apple and some veggies.
Mm-hmm.
Or something, I might understand it. But he went for the dried meat, like, immediately. Like,
bit of dried goat. Yum, yum, yum. So we see him, he's going around the town, he's talking to all the people in the marketplace. This is another montage where we don't hear a lot of what's being said, but we get the idea
there's
that
some
basically
ambient, yeah.
He's just kind of interviewing the townsfolk about what's been happening.
There's a few clips of them being like, oh, the speakers, the sleeping soldier, and the church discussed a lot in this scene.
Yeah.
And they
talk about how the bishop doesn't like the ancient wisdom that the speakers talk about. How they don't have any defenses in their town because the bishop has a plan. He's going to sort things out. We don't know what that plan is yet, but he's getting kind of a feel for things. Go ahead.
We also don't know who the bishop is yet.
It's the bishop. I felt like that was supposed to be a surprise, but I'm like, yeah, we know one bishop. Of course it's the bishop. Like, we only know one bishop.
Yeah, it's the bishop from the first episode.
Which I realize it's a different town, but still, I was like, of course it's going to be the bishop. Like,
yeah.
So then he runs across a couple of the bishop's men threatening an old man.
Yeah. The one of the priests has a long cross, I guess, on a staff.
Yeah, which he pulls out from under his robes. Where did you keep that?
It's got, but the cross has got like spiked ends, and it kind of looks like a weapon. And this guy pulls it up like he's gonna wield it like one, and I'm like, that's a cross. It's not supposed to be a weapon. It's supposed to be a thing of faith. And this guy's going to smack this old guy with it.
Yep.
And Trevor's walking past and he stops to listen to these priests berate this old man who turns out to be a speaker. Right before these priests assault this old man, Trevor decides that he can't stand it any longer and he's going to step in.
Yep. So the guy's got the cross in the air. He's about to bring it down on the old man's head.
The whip
cracks
and you see the cross fly up in the air, and when it lands,
there's a finger. He whipped the cross out of the man's hand and also the fingy out of the man's head. And there's a cross and a fingy on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that until it happened, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, this whip's like kind of badass, like.
And he goes, oh, I'm sorry, how's your finger? And the guy's like, what finger? Which I'm like, that's a pretty good quip for having just lost your finger. I don't think I would be put together enough to say something like, what finger? Because that's pretty good. I just let me get the line here. Go back. All right. Cross goes flying up in the air. Oh, look at it fly. Here it comes. It's falling down. Oh, there's a finger next to it. And the guy's like, and then Trevor goes, oh, hell, I'm sorry. Wait, that sounds, oh, hell, I'm sorry. I was trying to snatch your stave out of your hand. How's your finger? He goes, what f***ing finger? He goes, that's no way for a man of the cleft to talk. Why don't you go and get that look at?
Dog. Why are you barking?
But yeah,
so Trevor tries to tell the priest to go away. He's like, I don't like priests. Please go away. It's kind of like the bar fight where he's like, just go, just please, just go. Listen, just go. I did cut your finger off, but just go. Please, please go.
Listen, please. This is going to end up bad for you. Just go away. Leave the old man alone. He's not doing anyone any harm. You're the ones who are acting like jerks right now. How about you just, like, leave and nothing bad else will happen? And the priest who has his finger taken off goes, kill him.
To the other priest.
Mm-hmm. And the other priest
drops a knife out of his sleeve.
Yeah. And Trevor Bowman's like, huh, that's not a priest, a priestly thing. That's what did he call it? It's an assassin. A thieves knife. Yeah. I was thinking a rogue, but I knew that was wrong.
So then we get a fight scene where Trevor's using his whip and this priest is using this knife, and they just kind of go back and forth a little bit, and then Trevor kind of knocks him off guard.
No, there's no back and forth. No, he doesn't. He gets his ass kicked, like, immediately. He while Trevor doesn't disarm him, he handily dodges every attack. Mm-hmm. He wraps the dude's arm up in the first thing, flings him backwards, and when it cuts back to a scene, the dude has the whip wrapped around his ankle, and Trevor whips the whip, and this dude does, I would call it a flip. But
a bad flip, I think we can.
It's like a flare. If you know BMX tricks, that's a backflip with a 180 turn. That's essentially what the priest does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it doesn't work out well for the priest in the end. Do you want to tell the people why you just winced a minute ago?
So the guy, the priest, comes running at Trevor, like, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you good. And Trevor's like, no, you're not. And he sidesteps, and the guy, like, stumbles past Trevor. And Trevor, like, backhands the guy, like, you know, as he walks by. Like, it reminds me of, like, something you'd see in, like, a Jackie Chan movie where he would sidestep the guy and then bop him in the back of the head. But Trevor uses a whip instead of his hand. So the guy runs by, and he kind of backhands him with the whip, which knocks the dude's eyeball out of his socket and sticks it to a wall. No.
It's real gory.
It's super gross. I hated it. I don't like eye stuff, MC. You didn't tell me that somebody loses an eye. From now on, I have a rule. If we're watching a show that you've seen before and there's some eye stuff in it, you have to tell me.
I watched this ages ago. Like, I watched the first season when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I really don't remember all that much about it until I, like, rewatched it. And I was like, oh, yeah. All this gruesome stuff happens in this show.
It's nasty.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh. All right, so Trevor now is hanging out with the speakers. The priests go running off, and Trevor, the speaker invites him to come back to the place where they're staying.
Yeah.
There's 11 speakers. There's supposed to be 12, but one is missing. We get a lot of history and exposition here.
Yeah, I like how the speaker offers him food, and he's like, I would like a drink. And they go, can you get him water?
Bring him some water.
And he's like, I'm fine, actually. it's so clear Trevor it has become an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm gonna do a data dump. You ready?
Yeah.
Belmonts and speakers used to be friends, but Trevor hasn't really interacted with them in a long time. The speakers are the keepers of oral history. They don't write anything on paper. They just collect stories and then retell them. They also have practitioners of magic within the keepers, within the speakers' tribe. They are the ones who are kind of talking about this sleeping soldier that's under the city, and in fact the missing speaker is looking for the sleeping soldier. That's where they went. The missing speaker is the elder's grandchild, so the one that Trevor saved. It's his grandchild who's missing. And Trevor really wants the speakers to leave because he has found out through talking to the townspeople that the town is basically going to kill the speakers tonight before sundown, because the bishop thinks that that's going to prevent the creatures from attacking. So he's like, you've got to get out, you've got to get out, you've got to get out. And they're like, nah, my grandchild, we at least want my grandchild's body so that we can bury it. So he agrees that he's going to go get the body of the grandchild in exchange for the speakers leaving the city. Yeah, I think that's all the important, relevant plot info that we get in that scene.
Yes. That's all the he's the elder. That's the only extra.
Oh, the guy who saved speaker. Was the elder. Yeah. Anything else on this one?
He pretty much tells them to stay inside because it's going to be dangerous outside with the people hunting them and stuff.
Yeah.
And then he goes off to the catacombs, or the as the title of the show, this episode implies, the necropolis.
Mm-hmm. And the last interaction in this episode.
I remember one extra bit of information. It's the entrance is to the west of the church.
Okay. I didn't remember that, but sure. It doesn't. He starts in the mausoleum in the next episode.
Yeah. Well,
that does feel like. So one of the things I think is interesting about the show is it doesn't feel very video gamey.
No.
Episode 4 has a little bit of a nod towards video games, where when he's in a fight with a supernatural being who teleports, and I was like, oh, that's totally a boss fight mechanic, like the way that the teleportation works. But other than that, nothing about it feels very video gamey. except for what you just said, the like, oh, the entrance to the mausoleum is west of the church. Like, that feels like something you would hear in a video game, where it's like, okay, can you just put a marker on my map for me, though?
That's very Link to the Past.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, where God, they, yeah. Because in Link to the Past, they, or like Super Nintendo era, they wouldn't put the mark on the map or have like an arrow on your screen pointing in the way that you would need to go. They would tell you specific clues of where places were and where things were, but they wouldn't actually tell you how to get there.
Yeah.
You would have to find these other like landmarks and things to get to places.
What's interesting about it in Castlevania, though, is that Castlevania games don't do that because they're pretty much side-scrolling games. But I think starting with Super Castlevania is where it became the Metroidvania style, and so
yeah,
have a little bit more that you'd have to figure out.
Metroidvania games piss me off.
Oh, I love them. It's like my favorite kind of game.
Nah, I get lost in them because I have no sense of direction.
They're the best. I love Metroidvanias. I think I
need landmarks.
A bit of Castlevania 3, but I think I'm gonna go get. I think it's Super Metroid or Super. No, it's Castlevania 4 and Super Metroid were the ones that together coined the phrase or Metroidvania. I think I'm gonna try Castlevania 4, the first one that's kind of that style, and see how I like it. The last line of the episode is the speaker says, "It's not the dying that frightens us. It's living without having done our best." And Trevor turns and looks at him and goes, "I don't care."
Which comes up in the next episode as well.
Yeah, I had to get it in now so that we could call back to it next episode when we talk about Season 1, Episode 3 of Castlevania, Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the best animated shows ever, so far. Find the show on Twitter at BaseSFCast or email us at BaseSFCast@gmail.com. That's BaseSFCast. Our intro music is Funnin' and Sunnin', and our outro music is Motivator, both by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next time.
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work
for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.
Do you like video games? Ever thought about making a video game? Do you find that a week or 2 weeks is kind of short for a game jam? Well, have I got the game jam for you with the We Can Make This Work Probably Game Jam. We have 9 themes. You can choose one for your game. Each theme is taken from one of our 9 podcasts. The jam runs from April 20th to June 9th to provide a nice amount of time for you to make something cool. Check out the link in the description for more information and to figure out how to join and submit. Have fun!